Contemporary Music Centre podcast series, Composer of the Month for February 2008, Derek Ball. In part one of this two-part podcast, Derek speaks to Michael Quinn about deciding to leave medicine to compose full-time, the volume of work he's produced since retiring, what triggers an idea for a piece, the influence of literature and language on his work, and working with poet Gabriel Rosenstock on the work Shalapa.
Derek Ball, you've returned to Ireland and to music after 30 years in Scotland and working in medicine. Has it felt like a homecoming in both senses to you?
A homecoming? I think music is something I should never have left. Quite seriously, I think I made a little error doing medicine. I enjoyed it. It was a very good career. I probably did a little bit of good while I was there, but if I had my life to live over again, I would have done music. I would have specialised, would have done a music degree, and I would have spent my whole life in music.
You left Ireland in 78, I think, to go to Scotland and to take up a medical post, a position there. And have only just returned, again, you retired recently, and have only just returned to writing music again. I'm just curious to know what role music played in your life while you were having another career.
Yes. During my time in medicine, I never stopped involvement with music. I was always involved in some aspect of it, and I was always composing a little bit. But medicine swallows up all your time and all your energy. Mm. You'd start work at 8:30 in the morning. You'd often be still at it at 8:30, 9:10 at night, and you'd take work home. So it was, in terms of time and energy, it was very demanding.
Not dissimilar to music and to composing.
Well, I'd say music is relaxing by comparison. So you do have to put on, you have to put in a lot of hours in music, but they're not, it's not a vast effort. Mm. It doesn't drain you.
Because you've been very busy as a composer and had a very fast emerging profile for most of the 70s. Was it easy to move away from music at that point when you moved to medicine? And is it as easy to move back to it now?
I've never thought about that. Moving away just seemed the necessary and natural thing at the time. So I sort of didn't give it a second thought. I didn't regret it. I wouldn't say I sort of dragged away to medicine reluctantly.
Now that you're composing again, do you find that music is at your fingertips now, or more so than before?
There's a sort of feeling as though a lot of stuff has been dammed up, and as soon as the dam's taken away, it all just gushes out. Right. So at the moment, all I have to do is think of a piece, and it's written almost just like that.
Because you said you had been writing a little bit while you were in Scotland.
And yes.
Latterly, you had been active in the Scottish Society of Composers, but more in an administrative role than as
a composer. Yes, that's right, as a secretary.
Right.
And did little bits of writing. I mean, certainly for many years before I retired from medicine, I was getting performances. I was getting little performances, and I was probably, writing a bit more. I was probably clawing back a bit of time and energy from medicine even before I left it.
Were you writing to commission, or was it some? What was prompting the interruption there in the decision not to write?
Yes, I think if you talk in terms of decisions, isn't the way it worked. I think things happen to me. I don't decide. I've had very occasional commissions, but I'd say most of the time, I have written to my enthusiasms. I've written something because I've thought of it and I've been interested in it, not because somebody wanted me to do it. I tend to write pieces, even big pieces, long orchestral pieces, a half-hour viola concerto, for example. That just sort of came out a couple of years before I retired, and then I started hawking it around. So that's the way it works. It happens. I don't sit down and think, I better write this and I better write that. Never.
Well, what has changed in the intervening period? Because in the 70s you set up the Association of Young Irish Composers.
Well, I didn't set it up.
Oh, well, you co-founded it. You were part of it. But so that was obviously a moment in which there was an expressed need to, or a recognition of a need to do something to promote and to raise the profile of young Irish composers.
Mm.
How much of the landscape has changed in the time that you've been away, do you think?
I think the way in which things have changed, it seems to me that there are a lot more people involved in it now, and probably the opportunities are a bit better. But there's more competition, more opportunities, more competition, so really, in a way, we're no better off.
Particular triggers or provocations to particular pieces, or does the urge to write come from the same place all the time?
I think the very often the trigger is a conversation I have with somebody, you know, maybe a performer or something like that. Unsuspecting performers will have a little chat with me, and then a few weeks later they'll get a piece, you know. Just for example, Paul Rowe, the clarinetist. Mm. He had a piece in the on the website, on the CMC website, a month or two ago. He did a little interview, and I read that, and almost immediately I wrote him a piece, and went along to his house and workshopped it. So it's things like that.
What was it he had said that prompted you to do that?
He said something about liking to work with composers. He didn't like the idea of a composer just sitting down and writing a piece and then handing it over. He liked the idea of collaborating, helping the composer out with technical aspects. Now, I'm a clarinetist, actually. I can play the clarinet in a kind of way. So I've got a little head start. But if I'm writing a clarinet piece, there are things that a professional can tell you, sometimes very obvious things that we don't think of.
You quote Proust on your CMC profile.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a reference to Maupassant in one of your pieces. And is literature a stimulus for you?
It is sometimes. I think sometimes literature is a help. Words are a help in giving some kind of a shape to something that would otherwise not have a shape. But I think more often there's some sort of vague, abstract idea that shapes music rather than programme. In my case, the Proust and the Maupassant, I think my liking for those kind of writers is something to do with the musicality of what they do. They're probably more emotional writers than average. They deal in intangible things like the memories that are triggered off by something you can't put your finger on. And they're memories that are very hard to grasp as well. They're fleeting. They slip through your fingers.
You talk about the musicality of their language. What about musical influences for you? Are there touchstones and reference points that you constantly return to?
I've been told that in some of my pieces there's an obvious Stravinsky influence. I don't know. I can't hear it.
Well, a piece like Schlottel clearly has
yes.
Some might say has a Stravinskian element to it in terms of, not least in terms of energy, but it also seems to me that it's quite an elemental piece and has an almost Brucknerian density to it. Well, tell me how that work came about, because it's a very striking piece altogether.
So the piece Schlottl, which has Gabriel Rosenstock, the poet, reciting his poem to a background, a sort of wind background. Mm. How that piece came about was that Gabriel recited the poem for me, and I recorded him reciting the whole poem, which takes about a quarter of an hour or something to say. And then I just suddenly thought, in an afternoon, I could make a nice background. I got my French horn out, and I multi-tracked that, and I added on a few other bits and pieces, and that's the result. And it took about an hour or something like that to do. It was throwaway. So,
and yet
there's nothing Brucknerian about that.
Well, in terms of scale and density, I think there's and that sense of something other than the surface of the music is.
Well, I think isn't that just like it? If I was working at something and saying I must write something with scale and density, I'd probably fail miserably, because I wasn't trying. Well, I'm glad to think you think I achieved it there.
Now, we should explain a little bit about that piece, because it's available on the CMC website.
Right.
And
right.
Its background is rooted in South American, in Aztec and Inca mythology, but it's also part of a larger piece that you're still currently working on.
Yes, this is one of my little interests at the moment. It's one of my of many things, many half-finished projects. The interest in ancient Mexican culture, in Aztec culture, came from Gabriel Rosenstock. He enthused me about it. And we're working on a big project that will have singing, dancing, costume, mask. It'll have a bit of everything. It'll be a sort of totally unified art form. Nothing will be left out. And, of course, we're looking for a promoter of some sort to take it on. We're writing it on spec. It's a new poem about an Aztec god called Xolotl. That's where the name of the poem comes from, Aztec god. It's all rather bizarre, dreamlike, and probably tequila influenced.
Dr. Temple do mette kutli, deremni vach sail shirsheng ach tintan. Birger sheng ach baul farge, eng ach prin monon, gebos. Nur der Anfren jöl, den Chnav, nur der Hettig, ne Schkirn röhe. Nach Glüsken noch ein Glügger im Kuss, ein jene gach kräfferlichen Schinne Tieren an Wäusch, Miklente Kutli, gösse Lena und Schiri Sön, Miklente Quattl. Na, Quinter, ne Lenny Oga, keilig Rivenau, mor, Duke shield and lacht crowns the flash so the village of the Rassel. Now you'd shoot a bar.
What is it you want to do with your music? Because the Proust quote suggests that you regard the composer as a sort of unnoticed observer, standing and watching and reflecting and trying to get to the heart of something rather than just describing the thing in front of them.
Yes. Yes. That's an interesting point, isn't it? The unnoticed observer, and I think quite a lot of composers feel like that. They're unnoticed. Their music isn't played and they're unnoticed. I think most of us would probably write for ourselves, even if we were told you'll never have another piece of music played, we hate your music, we're not going to play it, you'd keep writing it. Mm. And yet you're writing it for an audience as well, you hope. It's an interesting dual activity. You're writing for yourself in a certain way, and you're writing for your potential audience and performers and other composers. I think that's one of these mysterious things to which there's no sensible answer.
Well, I'm curious to know as well whether your experience in psychiatry informs the process of writing for you, or...
I don't think it informs the process at all. I think it's influenced the material. For example, if we go on to talk about my operas, there are several, I can't quite count up now, several of my operas have psychiatric subjects, either directly or indirectly. Madness, certain types of psychiatric treatment occur in these operas. So the material, yes. The process, probably not. I think psychiatry can help to treat illness, but for normal life, it doesn't have much to offer.
Well, when you're trying to work through those issues with in your music, is that because you think that music can unlock something?
I don't know what music does, and I don't know what, you know, what I intend music to do. It's something that happens to me, and I think I'm a sort of passive observer of the process rather than an active decision maker.
And that's your own sense of yourself as a composer.
Yeah.
Is there a kind of notion of isolation or being removed from the world around you?
The world around me? No, I wouldn't say so. But I think there's often a feeling of standing back and watching music happen with a feeling of surprise. Did I write that?
But is that a product of the interrupted career as a composer? Because I also kind of hear in your work a kind of duality or a dichotomy between the sureness of maturity, the way you handle the material and the way you shape it and move it forward, but also that sheer kind of conviction and passion and vigour of youth. And I wonder if that's trying to short-circuit the space in between to connect where you were 30 years ago with where you are now as a composer.
Yes, I didn't realise my music sounded assured. I don't think I feel assured. I think I had a certain facility, and I just, you know, I trotted these things out completely confident that they were masterpieces, and I no longer do that. The idea of having facility, of being able to write quickly and easily, risks also being facile. I do worry about that a little bit. If I write a piece too quickly, I might sort of hold it back a little while, just sort of give the impression it's taken longer than it really has.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Contemporary Music Centre Ireland. For more information, audio and video, go to www.cmc.ie.